Start your day with OTB AM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show. Watch or listen live from 7:30 and subscribe to the OTB AM podcast.
Amy Delaney, good morning to you.
Morning, lads. How are you?
How are you getting on? We'll get stuck into Tottenham and everything that's happening there, Jose and all that, in just a few minutes, and looking ahead to the weekend of Premier League as well. But just wanted to touch on briefly with you. You were on with us, obviously, after the Ireland game, and your suggestion that Stephen Kenny could come in a little bit early, or that he should come in a little bit early at Mick McCarthy's expense ahead of the playoffs. I don't know if you paid much of attention to the reaction to it, but not getting a lot of support.
Yeah, listen, Mick's obviously going to be able to finish out the job that he started. But if you look at the qualifying campaign that we've just had, which is the 8 games, there's no way that you could qualify it as a success. I don't think there's anything in it that would make, say, you know, finishing third in the group. We scored 7 goals in 8 games. We won 3 games. We had a catastrophically low amount of possession. If you set the bar of Martin O'Neill, the end of Martin O'Neill's era, then yes, Mick has improved it. But I think we as a nation need to start taking ourselves more seriously, believing ourselves in a little bit more, and that will progress. You know, football has moved forward. It keeps moving. We are now a tier three nation, or a pot three nation. And the pot four teams, the likes of Georgia, are improving all the time. I remember, you know, 10 years ago when we played Georgia, it was pretty much a slam dunk 6 points. But, you know, it was, if we didn't take 6 points off Georgia 10 years ago, we'd be very, very upset. No, people were kind of saying Georgia are you know, really good side, they're difficult to beat. That's because they're progressing and we're standing still. So they're catching up to us and we're standing still. Now, perhaps it was my impatience the other night where I just said, because I want to get moving. We have to join the 21st century of football nations. We have to join the plan of progressing and playing football the right way. You know, when Mick McCarthy applies the tactics that he applies, he doesn't have a Robbie Keane at the end of it to put the ball in the back of the net or to finish it off the way we used to have, well, then I just think that we're kind of banging our heads against the brick wall. Now, somehow, we are in a playoff. I don't think anybody really knows how or why, but we are. It's going to be a difficult route to take. But my point the other night was, we need to kind of get with the programme. We have to start moving forward. We have to start believing in ourselves a little more. You know, Michael O'Neill did a fantastic job at Shamrock Rovers getting them into the group stages of the Europa League, and then Northern Ireland took the plunge with him, and he's been an unqualified success. You know, I don't subscribe to people that come in and say, oh, well, you know, Stephen Kenny, he's unproven at this level. Or the players might not believe in him because he's not managed at the highest level. That is absolute rubbish. I cannot subscribe to that. You know, Stephen Kenny done a fantastic job at Dundalk, and he's doing a fantastic job at under-21s. And it's very easy for people to also say, oh, well, he's got a great under-21s team. There's been plenty of great under-21s teams over the years when you look at the players that have played and never even came close qualifying for a major tournament. What I like about Stephen Kenny is his demeanour, his confidence. He will not accept second place. He does not play for draws. He's not interested in that. And I just think that before the Denmark game, am I right in saying that Mick McCarthy was asked, would you accept the draw? No. And he said something along the lines of, I'd rip up the boarding card. Which is, not a great thing to say, to send up your players. But bearing in mind, we're a pot three nation, right? And we were in a group with Switzerland and Denmark. I mean, Switzerland and Denmark now. I'm not talking like other teams' groups, North of Ireland, but they've got Holland and Germany. You know, I mean, real powerhouses of Europe. So I think the best for us moving forward to hope for is to get into a pot with a Switzerland and a Denmark. Because if we, for instance, get lumped in a nation with a Holland or a Germany or France or an Italy or Spain, well, then we've got absolutely no chance. And the only way we're going to get back to being a pot two nation is by being successful. But all the while, we're not being successful. We're finding it more and more difficult. And as I said before, the pot four teams are catching us up now. So the longer we wait, and yes, it probably was my impatience, and Mick was brought in to do a job, and in all seriousness or in all fairness, he should be allowed to finish it off, and he will be allowed to finish it off. Of course he will. But my point was, we need to join the 21st century and start moving forward. And I didn't feel that we did the other night. So in all fairness, that's how I feel about it. That's how we see it. I think Stephen Kenny is definitely the man for the job. I remember when they played a very, very good Italy under 21 side not so long ago, Tala. I never heard anything negative come out of his mouth about playing for draws or, you know, how great the opposition were. You know, he was talking about how good Ireland were. Yeah. And as a player, that's what we want to hear from, as a player, that's what we want to hear a manager say, that he genuinely believes in you. But when a manager's saying that he's going to rip up a boarding card, like, as a player, I mean, it was Denmark away, not Italy away, or not Spain away, or none of the major powerhouses. So look, anyway, that's how I felt about it, man. I'm not really worried whether people bought into it or not. That was my general point. Perhaps I didn't get across that on the night, and I was a little bit emotional after the game because of the result and the fact that, you know, everyone was saying how good Ireland played, and we played okay. Let's just get it that way. And we were playing against a Danish team that essentially came for a draw. They had no interest in pressing us. So when we did string two or three passes together, they didn't press. They didn't run forward. They didn't pass forward. I lost count the amount of times Eriksen got the ball in his usual position and turned out and went backwards. So they clearly had a game plan coming to Dublin. So that's how I feel, lads. I don't know if anyone else agrees, but that's how I see it.
No, that's fair enough. Like, I think that one of the biggest things that I think people leaving the ground the other night were kind of saying that, like, if we can, and I'm interested to get your thoughts on it before we move on to talk about the weekend, but that, you know, if we can repeat that performance against Slovakia or Northern Ireland or whoever it ends up being along this path, and you've already said yourself there that it's going to be a difficult path for us, that if we can repeat that performance, that we will probably get there. Are you feeling that? It sounds like you're not.
Not at all. I mean, we had 8 qualifying games. And the last one, we put in a semi-decent performance. And let's not get carried away, man. If the bar is set so low and then we put in a good performance or a semi-decent performance against Denmark, and it was a good performance, it was okay. But you got to remember where the Danes were at. They were happy with a draw. They were definitely playing for a draw. So if we repeat that performance twice, well, then yes, we probably have a chance. But we didn't. We did it once in 8 games. Are we going to string 2 together back-to-back? Maybe, man. But look, the sooner that we move forward, and I love Mick, I genuinely do, and it's not a personal attack on Mick. I don't feel any ill will towards him, and I think he's had a fantastic career as a manager, and he's done brilliant. But he's done the job that he was brought in to do as well, because he's come in and he's managed the Irish team the way he said he was going to. It's just, unfortunately, football has moved forward, and he doesn't have a Robbie Keane. So the way he went about it, we've come up short so far. Granted, we have a playoff to come, and then if Ireland qualify, I'll be as happy as anyone. I genuinely will, because we all get to look forward to a major tournament. And, you know, after that, then Stephen Kenny will come in, and hopefully he can restore some real belief in the players and install some real belief in the fans as well.
I guess that idea of kind of breaking the glass ceiling whenever possible to actually finish above a Tier 1 or a Tier 2 nation is probably hammered home as well by the fact that there was a safety net of this playoff. We were always going to get the playoff. Gibraltar are the only team who didn't get the playoff in this group. It was almost the perfect marriage of things to allow us to take that risk.
Well, exactly. And I mean, if there was ever a time to move forward and play football and join the 21st century, this is it. Because you can afford to almost fail, because, you know, I think the last qualifying campaign was a failure in terms of the 8 games. Now we move into a playoff scenario. So we should move forward and play football. What's there to lose? If we're still going to end up in playoffs, and with the expanded tournaments, it's becoming easier to qualify for major tournaments because the tournaments are getting expanded. But it's becoming more difficult for us because we're falling off the pace so much.
Yeah, all right. We'll have plenty more time to discuss it and chat to you again about it and on. Something else that I think you might feel a small bit passionately about, sit in the line for 1 second, just take a quick clip at Glenn Johnson here reflecting on Christian Bull, as it's been referred to, that famous Crystal Palace-Liverpool game of a couple of years ago. Here he is on TalkSport yesterday.
Before that was absolutely cruising, felt invincible really. Obviously then the Chelsea game comes and the result is what it is. So it's a dent to our confidence because we didn't see that coming. And even in that game, we pretty much dominated the game and Chelsea just sat back and hit us on the break. But we're the better team. But of course, the scoreline don't show that. So that was kind of a result that started it, where we thought that we just did not see that coming. And then obviously the Palace game, we were playing really well, absolutely flying. Could have been 5-0 up at one point. But obviously, freeze, you're still thinking the game's done. I don't think anyone watching a game or listening to the game, and certainly not us on the pitch, would have thought that we was going to drop any points. But then obviously there's, like I said earlier, I think Delaney was the guy that hit the strike from, what, 35 yards or whatever, and probably has only scored a handful of goals in his career, and bloody happened to be against us in that sort of fashion. So in that moment, everyone started looking at each other just to say, surely not. Let's just carry on playing the way we have been, and it'll be fine. But then shortly after, they get another one, and then obviously another one, and then you're up against it, and now the balloon's really been burst, and the reality just sort of hit you like a sledgehammer.
Well...
Yeah, I can't disagree with him there. I haven't scored many. I've definitely never scored many like that. So, yeah, listen, that was a great night. You know, fantastic season for us that year. You know, I think we had 44, 45 points going into that game. I think it was Monday night football. You know, beautiful early summer night. It was still bright when you come out for the second half. One of those types of nights, and real good feel around the place. And that was the belief that we had in the team, that even at 3-0 down, you know, it didn't matter. We just kept going and going and going. And more often than not, that stuff doesn't happen. But that was one of those nights where it did. And it was a fantastic evening for everyone involved at Crystal Palace.
It was the second from last game, I think, if I'm right, in the season. And they were Liverpool needed, they were trying to rack up 8 or 9 goals or whatever it was that night. In fact, they were singing, "We want 8, if I'm right, from the stands.
That's true, and I was listening to that thinking, oh please no, I don't need that. I just booked my holiday, and I was thinking it was been a great season, we just had our awards night, everyone was in a really good mood, and we went in at half time, and I remember Tony Pulis just absolutely, you know, because he'd been quite nice, and he probably annoyed with himself because he had quite a nice week's training building up to that game, and he probably thought that's why we were 3-0 down. And he just absolutely cut loose at myself and Scott Dan, and I mean really cut loose at the two of us, man. The first time he really showed his teeth, you know, and I was just sitting there going, oh, come on, man, I'm going on my, you know, the season's over, I'm going on my holidays, it's been a great year, and I've got to deal with this. But luckily, it turned into be one of the most fantastic nights of my career, really, and we still went off and had a good summer holidays.
What did he say?
Oh, I couldn't even repeat it on more. I couldn't even repeat it full stop. I mean, there was a lot of swearing in there. I think the words useless. You think you're on your summer holidays. You won't be going on your holidays. I'll keep you here. I think you mentioned something like, you know, your contracts with the FA are like, you know, you're only entitled to 2 weeks off or something, so you're only going to get 2 weeks off in the summer.
How much did you get in the end?
I know, he was fine, you know what I mean?
But when you score a 35-yard screamer after that, it's like...
I was going to ask him afterwards, could have extra time off.
Yeah, take 6 weeks.
Yeah, but I was listening, he was very good for us that year. I think Tony Pulis got manager of the season, or the writers, football writers manager of the season, which is, I think, the first time that a manager outside the traditional top four got it. I think I'm right in saying that. And so he was fantastic for us that year, and great night.
Was there kind of a sense from Tony Pulis or anything he said on the night that it's like, let's spoil the party, boys, and that was kind of a big incentive for him?
No, not really. He never really focused. He never focused on the opposition. He very rarely spoke about the opposition. He was always talking about us and what we were going to do, and our game plan, and just made sure that we were set. He was one of those old-fashioned type managers where he had no interest in the opposition. But I think that week up in training, I mean, Tony Pulis would never give you a 5-a-side in training or never allow you to have any fun in training. It was always work. And I think in the build-up to that Liverpool game, I think he probably did allow us a few 5-a-sides. And I think that was probably the first and last time we let anyone have a 5-a-side, because he definitely felt that our concentration was broke in that first half anyway.
Did Suarez nutmeg you for, was it their second play to 1-2?
Probably, yeah. I mean, you know, you saying that, really, that's probably true. So I don't remember that. But, was that the one? Oh, yeah.
He played a 1-2 a little bit of a sort of semi-Cruyff turn on the edge of the box. And I think you were chasing him up after that. And he played a 1-2 and got in. I presume that when you see him crying on the pitch at the end of the game, you're like, well, you know.
Well, yeah, that's karma. It. And then, do you know what, I think Daniel Sturridge's goal the following day was like awarded to me anyway, because he was shot that was going on getting into Schles. So it was a great night all in all for me, you know. Own goal, not made by Suarez, battered by Tony Pulis.
So, yeah, speaking of deflections, where was your shot going if it doesn't hit Glenn Johnson?
In the other top corner.
of the stand?
No. The other top corner. If you look from behind it, I'm telling you now, it was going in the other top corner. I mean, it wasn't deflection that took that much of a change of course anyway. Anyway, it was a great goal. And
I was talking to somebody during the week who was in the ground that night. They were saying when it went 3-2 that the ground, and it's an old ground, obviously, was like physically shaking, that the place was sort of sensing that there was something on here.
Yeah, it was, and the fans were fantastic with us that year. And I was just praying that there was another few minutes because the winner was coming. I know that seems like a really simplistic, easy thing to say, but the winner was coming. We genuinely weren't a million miles away. And if the game had been another 2 or 3 minutes long, I felt that we would have got it because they were just gone. I mean, Suarez was almost in tears within the last couple of minutes of the game. And I think a lot of the players had just thrown the towel in because they obviously knew the league was gone. And if it was another couple of minutes, we would have got the winner.
Yeah. There's those mad scenes at the end where Gerrard has gone up to pick Suarez off the pitch and he's got his head into his jersey, clearly hunkered down, crying, and Gerrard is trying to brush the cameras away. Don't be looking at this. It's car crash stuff.
Yeah. I remember that, actually. Yeah. And I remember the following season, Martin Kelly, who was at Liverpool, he was on the bench for Liverpool that night, came and I remember talking to him about it, and he told me that like there was the scenes in the Liverpool change room afterwards was just, he said all the players were in tears. Suarez was just like attacking a football skip, and he just said Brendan Rodgers was just sitting down with his head in his hands. So I remember just laughing at that.
Do you still get grief from Liverpool fans about it?
No, they do, a lot of Liverpool fans. I mean, there's a lot of Liverpool fans in Ireland, so it does get brought up pretty regularly. But it's just fantastic that it was a part of like Premier, a game that, you know, has Premier League history to it, and people will always remember because of the type of night that it was. So I just feel absolutely privileged that I was a part of something like that, you know.
There's obviously a temptation to say that the Liverpool team now are a very different team, and there's been a lot of conversations about what they might achieve, obviously, this season. Do you go with that? Like, I mean, because there are, you can certainly look at some of their games recently and think, like, the Villa one is one that springs to mind, and think that in some regards, maybe that the appetite to get to that finishing line is freezes them at times.
This Liverpool team now, you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah? No, I think this Liverpool team now are completely different. You know, there's a steeliness to them. I really believe there's a toughness to them that comes from the manager. You know, I was always a massive believer that football teams take on the personalities of their managers. I know that's, you know, whatever the manager preaches every day, it almost becomes ingrained in the players. And I think Jurgen Klopp has got obviously a nice jovial kind of side to him. But I think there's a steeliness to him as well, and there's a toughness to him. You know, he's a big, imposing character as well. So I think this Liverpool team, you know, if I'm going to give you a prediction, I think they will win the league this year. Simply by the fact that I don't think Man City are capable of going on, you know, their usual 17, 18, 19 wins in a row type of run. I do think that Liverpool will, at best... at worst, match Manchester City's results from the run-in. I think Man City just aren't quite, you know, where they were. Liverpool look hungry. They look like the underdog or the chaser, you know, whereas Man City have had the success, and I think they're lacking that little bit of an edge. So I definitely think Liverpool have the steeliness as well to do it. So I think this will be their year.
Yeah, you take a 3-3 tomorrow afternoon as well, obviously. We'd all set for that. Jose Mourinho obviously has been one of the big storylines of the week, and his return to the Premier League at Tottenham. Any chance that this is, we've just been debating it around here a little bit earlier on, but any chance in your view, Damien, that this is a perfect match, that Mourinho realises that he's not the shiniest star in the pack anymore, and he shows a bit of humility that at a lot of times has been something that's been absent for him?
Well, the funniest thing was in his press conference when he said I'm humble, and then 2 minutes later he had the question about, you know, do you think that losing Champions League last year affected the Spurs side? And he said, well, I've never lost a Champions League final. So Just typical Jose, and I have to say I'm so happy he's back in the Premier League. I mean, the Premier League just isn't the same without him. Just his character, his press conferences, his antics on the touchline. I think whether you like him or you don't like him, I don't think you can deny the Premier League is a better place without him. First of all, the matchup with Daniel Levy, I don't know. I think there's going to be fireworks there. There has to be. Jose is obviously a manager that likes to spend money. Daniel Levy is a chairman that doesn't like to spend money. So I'm pretty sure that in the interview process, the two of them have sat down and spoke about that, about signings and moving forward. Tottenham as a football club, you know, has been renowned for years for being aesthetically really, really pleasing, but not winning any trophies. Whereas Jose in his career has been aesthetically awful at times, but a serial trophy winner. So the matchups there, you know, it doesn't seem to be a match made in heaven. Jose is back in London. And I know that when he was managing Manchester United, living in Manchester and his family living in London was a big issue for him. He spoke about that. He was living in a hotel, the Lowry Hotel in Manchester. So he's back living in London now. So maybe he's mentally and emotionally going to be in a better place, being around his family and not commuting and not living in a hotel room anymore. So hopefully we might see a kind of a better version of Mourinho. I also think that he's an incredibly self-reflective person, and I think the time off that he had, he definitely would have given an honest assessment of what went wrong at Manchester United, why it went wrong, what was his fault, what wasn't his fault, and I think he's going to come back a new manager. And I think that the Manchester United situation has probably put a chip back on his shoulder. And similar to like Liverpool, he's now the hunter instead of the hunted, you know. And I think he really has to prove that he can take a club like Tottenham into trophies. And I'm not thinking that it's going to be Carabao Cups and Charity Shield type stuff, you know. So I believe that Jose will win trophies, and it's just going to be interesting to see how it all unfolds.
Yeah, like the chip on the shoulder thing is important. I mean, it's something that you can kind of look at in the press conference yesterday, and he's quite sympathetic towards Pochettino's situation. But deep down, he's loving this. He's loving the situation that a manager or a person who runs a club has gone out of their way to pay one of the best managers they've ever had to make way for Jose Mourinho, for him, and then to pay him double the amount that this great manager had before him. There's no way that Jose Mourinho is feeling properly kind of caught up about this deep down. He is loving the situation that he's in. But like, just on that conflict, or the fireworks, as you put it, between himself and Daniel Levy, do you not think Daniel Levy knows what he's doing here? Like, he knows what Jose Mourinho is. He knows that he wants money. He's paid him a lot of money to be his manager. He knows the style of play. Like, I can identify that. Like, surely Daniel Levy can identify that. I'm just not sure how the conflict will emerge if Daniel Levy knows exactly what he's getting into.
Well, you see, the thing is, when he's changing manager, and it happened so quick that these guys have obviously, Mourinho and Levy, has also been talking for weeks previous to this happening. So when they went in and sat down, they're all nice talking to each other. Well, I want to do this. Oh, yeah, I can help you do that. And Levy, they're all nice. But the conflict's going to come when January comes around and Jose wants to spend £100 million and Levy starts. You know, Jose's not going to be the type to say, well, hang on a minute. You told me in January, you know, when, in the meeting when I got the job, you were going to spend this money, and now you're not. So I think there will be genuine fireworks. And I am looking forward to see how it unfolds.
But I think, has Levy not already come out and said that there isn't going to be a war chest for him, so to speak, in January? Like, I'd be astonished, Damien, if Levy hasn't spoken to Jose about this very thing, saying, even he could even go three windows into the future and say, if this happens, this is how much money you'll have. If this happens, this is how much money you'll have. This is a fella who's been the most frugal guy we've seen in modern football, really. I would just be astonished if he's appointed Jose Mourinho and is naively thinking, this is going to be fine. We will not have any disagreements about money whatsoever. Surely they've crossed those bridges.
Of course. But when you're talking in an interview process and it's all everyone's nice as pie to each other, Jose wants the job, Levy wants him, and they're all shaking hands and patting each other on the back. As I said, the crunch will come when Jose says you need to deliver on your promises, or Levy says, well, I never promised you that. So Jose is not the type that'll take that line down like Pochettino would. So when Pochettino went through two transfer windows without signing anyone, I could imagine Pochettino saying, okay, you're the owner, it's your decision. And Pochettino will kind of make best with the hand that he has. Jose is not that type of person. Jose will end up going public and going into the press and criticising his own chairman. So that's going to be the interesting part. But probably the most interesting part is what he does with the current changing room that he has, how he sorts out the differences that's going on there. and irons out what's happened, it's going to take all Jose Mourinho's man management skills that he's acquired over the years, because there are some serious divisions there in the changing room. That's what I'm saying. It's just a fantastic scenario for everyone. I mean, I wouldn't have called it if I'm being honest with you, but I think it's absolutely fantastic for the Premier League.
Plenty of support for your Irish thoughts, Damien, by the way. People in contact with us here this morning. Shane Ryan says, Damo knows his stuff. Very impressed since he's come on off the ball. I was very happy with the Republic of Ireland performance, but Damien Delaney makes sense in all he says. Damien, bang on the money, says Pat. The team's been told they're not good enough since the days of Trapp. Graham says, fair play, Damien, saying what he feels. A lot of people think the same about Ireland. Refreshing to hear, and plenty more along those lines as well. So, listen, keep at it. Thanks, many, for joining us this morning.
Thanks, boys. Appreciate it.
Go Thanks on. For that. Damien Delaney on the line there from Cork's morning with his thoughts ahead of the weekend. Interesting stuff.
You can see what he's saying. You can see why it needs to happen. And it's important to note that when you're reading or looking back on Delaney's quotes this morning, he is also giving the caveat that this is probably not going to happen. And in fairness, I think it's definitely not going to happen. The under-21s need Stephen Kenny at the moment as well. This has been a great campaign, and I'm sure Stephen Kenny would like to see this thing through a little bit further as well. I think bringing somebody in before the playoffs is stupid.
I think
that his point is that if you could have Stephen Kenny now, like, would Stephen Kenny be a better person to be a Republic of Ireland manager from the very start of the calendar year? Perhaps.
There's too many question marks about all of that to say with any certainty that that would definitely be the case. But the indicators are definitely there. Like, if you were to ask me to sit down and want to watch a football match for pure footballing terms right now, whether it would be the Republic of Ireland men's senior team or the under-21 team, like, there's just no question about it. The under-21 team are so entertaining. And, like, the other exciting part of it, apart from the Stephen Kenny aspect of it, is the number of players that are on that team who are clearly ready to step up to senior football. There's not been much conversation about Adam Ida in that regard. Like, it tends to be focused a lot, obviously, because he's been involved with the Irish setup, as well as Leo O'Connor, but Troy Parrott. But Adam Ida has been a sensation any time I've seen him play. Like, his maturity. And I know that it's a different standard and it'll be a different level required when he does inevitably move into the senior team, but what he can bring to that Irish team in a way that's not there at the minute. Like, there are Niall Quinn aspects to him, there are Robbie Keane aspects to him, there are like a hugely exciting prospect from an Irish point of view. Not to like put too much pressure on him and to get too overly excited with hyperbole here, but he's going to be the greatest Irish player of all time.
I just think that, and it's not even hindsight speaking, we all knew what we were getting into in this campaign with regards to the likelihood that we would make a playoff. I know we've spoken about this millions of times, but just the idea that Stephen Kenny wasn't allowed his first crack at it for this Euro campaign. Because the notion was floated out there, we have to qualify for this campaign, it's absolutely essential. Mick McCarthy is the man who will make sure that we qualify for a European Championships in which we have a home game, because that is essential. We have to put the veteran in there. But really, Mick McCarthy was always, there was always a chance that he was going to deliver us third place in this group, because he was going to deliver on the expectation. Now, the thing is the expectation for Mick McCarthy to go and beat Slovakia and beat Northern Ireland, potentially, you think it probably is, but it's very slight expectation. Yeah. If you slip below that expectation a little bit, like he speaks about the tier four, the pot four nations catching up to us very, very quickly. Like, they're the definition of those sort of nations that are kind of nipping at our heels at the moment. And I don't know, it's a hugely high pressure situation for Mick McCarthy now, like, as his, and you can say it's not high pressure because he's out the gap anyway. But really, it's the legacy of him as a
manager. And he wants to be there. He wants to be the guy that is here when the games come here. Like, I don't think there's any doubt about that. But I think that, like, whether that pressure frees the team to play like they did the last day, whatever you think, whether that was amazing, but it was definitely better than where it was before. So whether it frees him up to do that, or actually the pressure ends up freezing the team again, we shall see.
Start your day with OTBAM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show. Watch or listen live from 7:30 and subscribe to the OTBAM podcast.